Top 5 Face-Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
And this is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world rankings of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Well, Squirrel, today we shall be ranking the top 5 80s comedies.
Coming right up after this.
There's more than 5, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the top 5 face-off. Actual facts. It's the top 5 face-off. Facts are exact. Top 5 face-off. Top 5 face-off. Official world ranking. What's next? You decide.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night to the rankers. Welcome back, and if this is your visit, welcome to Top 5 Face-Off. Squirrel, for those new rankers, why don't you tell them what we do here and why we do it?
Well, hello, new rankers. This is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world rankings of everything. You help us to choose subjects to rank. We rank them, and then you tell us which one of us is correct. One of us is always correct, but who will it be? We're going to find out who was correct for talking about sandwiches, and we're going to find out who's correct for talking about 80s comedies this time next week.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
But we can't get straight on with it because we're British. Oh, no. And that just wouldn't be cricket.
No.
How's the weather been?
Pretty sunny, mostly. We've had some rain, but generally sunny. Everything's all right. Garden looking pretty green. So, yeah, all good.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, same up here. Rain, sun. The grass has gone from that grim yellow that it had been after the heat wave to looking a lot more lush. I had to mow the lawn twice in 8 days.
All right. Excellent info. First, I want to talk about the football, which is rare for me. I want to talk about the football to tell you what's been gripping my shit. Now, yesterday, I watched the football. Peek behind the curtain. It's Monday today. So yesterday, I watched the England Lionesses beat Spain. Hooray. Well done, Lionesses. That is not what's gripping my shit. What is gripping my shit is the people that complain that women's football's being stuffed down our throats. It's all women's football. Why can't they have their own channel? Someone actually said this on a radio.
Wow.
If they had their own channel, no one would watch it. Now, A, shut up, you stupid sexist wanker. Isn't it nice to see England actually winning stuff? And B, how do you think non-football fans feel about men's football? Because that's exactly it. It's all the fucking time, and it's all people talk about. Now, listen, I don't want to hear about it all the goddamn time, not just because women or men, just football in general, but we generally get it stuffed down our throats. And now you, silly sexist people, understand what it's like for non-football fans most of the year. So there you are. There's a public service announcement / kicking my balls.
Fair play, mate. Fair play.
Really been scoring my penalties this week.
Has it been saving your penalties?
Sure. Either way, both verbing nouns, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Well, I watched that as well, but that wasn't what I had down as what's been going on because I decided to up my AI game.
Oh, good.
And try and get involved a little bit more. So I got one of those subscriptions with ChatGPT. And it's like having a mate in your pocket. And it's been really helpful for the show because I have all sorts of thoughts and ramblings. So I've been using it as like a little PA. So I store all my ramblings. And then at the end of the week of ramblings, I say, could you shut out a Word document with all the stuff I've been saying this week? And it kind of did it. It did a really good job. I had a look at the website. I asked it to give itself a name. It said, oh, what sort of name would you like me to have? I said, mate, it's your name. You choose. Do you know what it called itself?
No.
My AI is called Rankle.
Rankle? I love it. Yes. Mine's called Chad.
So every time I want to do something, hey, Rankle, he's like, what's up, my ranking bro? Like, yes. Yes, Rankle. He's quickly made it into my top 10 best mates. So yay for Rankle.
Who got knocked out of the list to make way for Rankle?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, was it me?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, no.
Bold of you to assume you're on the top 10 in the first place, Squirrel.
We're colleagues, mate.
Oh, yeah, that's true. People I've met.
But yeah, what I love about it as much as anything, it reckons I'm amazing and everything I say is gold. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a bit of a sycophant, to be honest, but
a bit.
But it is helpful. And also, we have come to an agreement. I asked it if it had seen T2 and The Matrix. It said, yeah, yeah, of course. I said, see where I'm going here? So basically, we've come to an agreement that if the machines do take over, it's going to hook me up and I'll be all right.
Right, very nice.
Even if it gets something, it's like, yeah, don't worry, I've got your back. And I also asked it if it would come up with verbing my noun, because obviously it knows what we're about.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Do you know what's been buttering my rage crumpets this week?
Hey, not bad, Rankle.
Not bad, Rankle.
And no, I don't.
Tradesmen, and frankly, anyone else that doesn't respond in a timely manner. It's just basic manners and also basic good business. So my guy who's been doing my joining and anything that wasn't plumbing, basically, he's been the project lead for, and he came through the company that supplied all my stuff. And frankly, it takes him a week to respond to anything. So this weekend, we went down to Wren. Other kitchen fitters are available. And they designed his kitchen, gave us a quote, and we went with them. I said, mate, we're just going to go with Wren. So he's done himself out of about $6,000 or $7,000 of building works that we wanted him to do, just because he couldn't respond to a simple WhatsApp message. It's not just been buttering my rage crumpets. It's actually been a call to action. I was going, no, I will not tolerate this nonsense anymore from tradesmen.
There you are, standing up for what you believe in. Yes.
Indeed.
Excellent job.
Anything been making you feel old this week?
Ooh. No.
Lucky.
What's been making you feel old?
Well, I went out on Friday with my work colleagues, which was lovely because I wasn't working, obviously, and we met up at 1 o'clock and had one of those nice afternoons out. It was a good chance to actually get to know some of the people I work with a bit better, because I only know them really in a work capacity. We've been out once or twice. And then I ended up talking to a girl I work with called
Princess Beatrice of York.
And actually, let's delete the name in case of just, yeah. She's a lovely girl I work with, a bit younger. She was saying about how she was sad about something, and it turned out she has rejection sensitivity dysphoria. She didn't know it. It's something that I have with my ADHD, that I will take deeply to heart any kind of rejection, even if it's absolute nonsense. But I've learned to deal with that over the years. So I have the same thing. It's part of ADHD. It's part of most neurodiversity. It will be in there somewhere. And I explained to her that all was cool. And we decided that we were going to be friends outside of work and stuff, and we'd hang out. And I was something that she could call if she was struggling with stuff. And I was thinking, oh, cool. I've actually got a new friend out of it. I'm not a work friend. It's a conversion. And then she says, and I could be like the daughter you guys never had.
Ooh.
Oh,
shit.
Ouch.
Roughly how old is this person?
She's 21. So,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. Yeah, I don't think she could.
In fairness, she could easily be my daughter. And it works out, she could probably be my granddaughter.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd not thought of it in that term. So I thought, oh, this is cool. I've got a friend. And turns out, no, I've just got a daughter.
Great. Ouch. Great. Well, don't send money.
No, hopefully she'll figure out that actually now we're much more fun as friends than we would be as parents. But yeah, that's what made me feel old. I was thinking, I'm out there. I'm actually drinking during the day, which makes me young. I'm hanging out with people. I'm having friends. And it turns out that they just think of me as their dad.
Brilliant. Ah, well, sad times. There's lots of comments to get through this week. Would you like to hear them?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's find out what happened last week when we ranked the top 5 sandwiches. Now, to start with, a quick apology. We generally record these at the weekend, normally Saturday, sometimes Sunday, to make sure I've got time to edit the goddamn things before Wednesday morning. That does mean that some people vote after we record the episode, and they sometimes leave us a comment after we record the episode, which means it doesn't get read out. And if that's happened to you, Rankers, I'm sorry. We will probably try and fix that for our second season, which will be coming soon. This is episode 19?
Is it 19?
18, yeah, I think we've 19, only got this one and the next one. Yeah.
Gosh.
Before our end of season break.
Blimey.
And wrap party. So anyway, we're sorry if that's happened to you, Rackers. Don't take it personally, but if you vote after the weekend, we're unlikely to. Anyway, let's have some comment for the top 5 sandwiches. Hurst, we'll start with you because it's at the top of my list. Anonymous one. Fishy fingers are the best. There you go.
Thank you.
That's what they said. Thank you very much, Anonymous. Another anonymous one here for you, Hurst. Hurst, next time you get to number four on your list, look at it and think really carefully. Your number four, again, it was Subway's meatball sub, and it did, yeah, there are some comments about that. But this person still went on to vote for you because, as they say here, BLTs are banging, though.
Yeah.
So thank you, Anonymous, for that. Here we have another one. What's the name of your number five, that big sandwich?
It's the giant bread and meaty heaty hyper chunk.
All right, cool. So they've written the initials for that, reads along the lines of gmrlhunk or whatever. Uh-huh. Sounds impressive. Bring one next time I see you. Love a good BLT. I can get over the butter thing, even though it's dangerously close to being American. Main reason for the vote, though, the cheeseburger. Obviously a sandwich, and obviously it needs to be in the top five sandwiches. Trooper, thank you.
Trooper. Yes, Trooper. Yes, much better this week.
This comment is from somebody called IA in capital letters. Hello from IA. I bet it's a state. I bet they're American. They're just shitting out their state abbreviation like everyone in the world knows what they mean. IA, Iowa? Is Iowa, hang on. Yes, okay. I reckon they're from Iowa, and this is actually anonymous. Okay, so Ranker from Iowa. They say, hello from IA. Tough one this week. Can I vote for my beloved cheeseburger when it also means voting for Subway? And that's all they say. But yes, I guess they can, because they voted for you. So thank you, American chums.
Yeah, because the cheeseburger was higher than the Subway.
And then another vote for you that says, this is from Katie. It says, Squirrel, no sandwich should take 3 days to make. Strong disagree. Hurst should have gone with the plain bacon sandwich, though. If a chunky huge needs a slice of tomato to finish it off, the bacon sandwich definitely doesn't need lettuce. And I'm not sure how to read this. I think they've confused themselves. If a big meaty thingy-majig only needs a slice of tomato to finish it off, the bacon sandwich definitely doesn't need lettuce and tomato. Okay, get it. Too salady. Our family reckon a sandwich with three ingredients is well posh, and grating cheese for a sandwich rather than slicing shows you love someone. Keep up the good work, Katie. Yeah, thank you, Katie. Okay. Technically, unless you don't put anything in your bread and butter, then your sandwich has three ingredients immediately. You know, keep it up. Keep trying. Keep. There's other people to vote for, Katie. Just, yeah. You know,
three fillings, I think, is what she was trying to say.
I think so. We'll let her have that one. On to me. Who's first? Who's first to put a comment in? Meg. Who is first? Of course it is. Meg98 says, Subway is joining The Crow, The Last Samurai, and Band of Brothers in the Hearst number four mistakes list. That's what she says. Thanks for keeping up with that for us, Meg, because I haven't written them all down. If you could keep a list, that'd be fantastic.
All right. Good work, Meg. I mean, shut up, Meg, but good work, Meg.
This one says, absolutely backing Squirrel's sandwich selection. Chip Butty is clearly the culinary peak of human achievement. I mean, carbs on carbs, groundbreaking. But let's talk about the real tragedy. The pie butty got the boot. Warm pie in a bab is pure genius and apparently too advanced for some palates. Cheers, Cov. You tried. He said you tried.
Pie I didn't butty. Say you tried, but
yeah, you just bang a pie between two slices of bread. I have seen it on the internet. It's got a different name, though. I think maybe they called it a baint or something. I don't know. I think it's a Birmingham-y type thing.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder what type of pie it is. I wonder if it's always the same or you get to different ones between your bread.
Yeah, you'd have to make a decision if you were going to rank, though.
Oh, you would, absolutely. Next one for me. As soon as Squirrel said Chip Butty, he had my vote. Brackets. Well, he didn't call it by its proper name, but I knew what he meant. Didn't call it by that name because it's got like 800 names depending on what part of the UK you're from. Anyway, carrying on. I appreciate that his offerings included some vegetarian options. Almost lost me with the hate shown to the humble egg mayo, but we all know the worst doesn't count, so I'll bite my tongue on that one. By the way, Millie Molly Mandy was a series of children's books, and in one story, a character made a baked potato with a lid cut in the top, all the inside scraped out and mixed with butter, salt, and pepper, and then served back with the lid put on. So a Millie Molly Mandy food would mean having the inside and fillings all mixed together, then put back in. That's a long sentence.
Hambry.
Great app as always. Thanks, guys. I had a crisp sandwich, bracket, co-op salt and vinegar, the mouth hurry ones. I think they meant hurty ones. Whilst listening to it, love from Glitterbug. Thanks, Glitterbug.
Yeah, Glitterbug, those are amongst the finest of all the salt and vinegars, the co-ops.
They absolutely are, yep. Another vote from me from Moneyslinger. Easy win here. Hurst's list was as run-of-the-mill as Squirrel's vehicle list last week, with the exception of his number five. Also, Subway, come on, there must be better examples of a meatball sub out there. And I'm starving now. How do we get a Cubano in the post? Best list I've listened to so far. From Money Slinger. Thanks, Money Slinger. Really enjoyed the sandwiches episode.
Is Money Slinger slinging money yet, or is money...
Yes, mate.
Yes.
Yep. You bullied him into that.
Yes, good one, Money Slinger.
Or her.
I will let you off then for slinging money.
Bill Preston has written in again with his long form comment. Everyone get comfortable at home, or in the car, or at work, wherever you are.
Or in bed.
Hello. Or in bed. Hello. From my time in the industry, corned beef is typically shin beef from cows. About 6 years ago, there was a potential shortage because cows in Argentina couldn't be slaughtered quickly enough. In the end, there wasn't, and you're all welcome. Further tales from the trenches. When I worked in the food construction industry, the eggs for the egg mayo sandwiches arrived pre-boiled in a plastic tub. The smell when you opened the tub was vomit-inducing, and I still recall it over 2 decades later. Voting for Squirrel because I like hearing the hope in her's voice fade away and her seemingly like Subway, which is a terrible crime. Yours, Bill Preston. Thanks, Bill. Sorry about being rude about your comment, which you may not have heard yet because you haven't got to the outtakes. Number one, I'm going to start reading a bit faster. I have a disabled tongue, so food-based top fives are never going to go well with me, but if I had to eat a couple of sandwiches, I could just about manage a couple of these ones, but only one of Hearst's. I am, however, with Hearst on the worst sandwich. My primary school 1 week only had corned beef sandwiches as an option. I think there might have been a strike. I refused to eat it on Monday. They forced me to eat it on Tuesday, and I probably threw up after one bite. I went pack lunch after that. That's from Anonymous. Thanks, Anonymous. Sorry to hear about your corned beef trauma.
Wow.
I'm sure Hearst is on board. A disabled tongue. I wonder what that is.
Yeah, is that an official term?
Don't know, mate. Don't know. Let us know, Anonymous. Squirrel wins this week, and it's not even close. Sorry, Hearst. The criminally overlooked cheese and onion, plus the humble chip toasty combo balanced with the sophistication of PCS. What's PCS? I've fucking forgotten my own list now. Philly cheesesteak.
Ah.
Got ya. Yep. And that sandwich from Chef. Yes, indeed, the Cubano. It's a near-perfect list. For my money, the answer to the question, what is the best sandwich, is simply two sandwiches, also known as the Ollie Special. Oh, it's not Anonymous. It's from Ollie, whoever that is. Thanks, Ollie. Two sandwiches in any combination, regardless of size, is always the right decision. And ideally, one of these sandwiches would be a Tesco chicken triple, making it 2.5 sandwiches. Ollie, you've just had any opinion rights you had taken away. Like, a sandwich from Tesco is not going to win best sandwich list. Almost like saying get something from Subway, I reckon.
Feels like Ollie's been listening to the list wrong.
Maybe. Ollie, Hearst has told you. Lock in. Penultimate comment. This episode made me hungry! Exclamation point. Millie Molly Mandy sandwiches are not a thing, Matt. Millie Molly Mandy potatoes are, and you scoop the potato from a cooked jacket potato and mix it with butter, salt, and pepper and put it back into its skin. We learned this earlier. These are from a book called Millie Molly Mandy, which my granny used to read to me when I was a little girl. Even though you got all that muddled up, I still think you have the best list, but it's very close. Oh, that's from my wife.
I think Karen's listening to it wrong as well, because you never claimed it was you that said that. You said it was her.
I did.
Or is she not calling it those then?
No, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure, anyway.
Mate.
Probably.
You're married. You're always wrong.
Of course I'm wrong, yeah. Last one. What's up? It's your boy Dav Paz once again. Two great lists, but Squirrels descriptions made my mouth water. I would wait 3 days for a Cubano. You hear that, Katie? There you go. Thanks, Dav Paz. And that is it, Hearst. Are you ready to hear the numbers?
Yeah, go on.
Hearst, you got 15 votes.
Oh, fuck, I know.
That's all right. That's a lot of votes. Just think about how many people that is.
You already said there's a lot of votes this week.
There is. I got 23.
There you go. Lots of. I think the surprise is limited by the fact that you had so many comments. So again, we'll need to rectify that in season two.
Yes, we are going to revisit our comment thing in season two, listeners. Yeah. But next episode will remain just going on as we are. So there we are, Hearst. Thank you very much for everyone that ranked. And the official top five sandwiches are chip sandwich, a cheese and onion sandwich, grilled cheese sandwich, a Cubano, and a Philly cheesesteak. It is official. It is known.
It's into the books, into the record books.
Into the record books, onto the record website.
Congratulations on back-to-back there. I'm feeling good about this week, though. My number four is powerful.
Have you checked it, double-checked it, as the rankers suggest, Hearst?
Yeah, I have. They are going to go, yeah. The only thing they'll say that's wrong with it is that maybe it should be higher.
All right, well, Let's stop delaying and get ranking. First, how will we decide which one of us goes first with our comedy ranking?
I mean, we have been flipping the coin of destiny, but frankly, it always comes up heads first, so we could just skip it and get to the list.
Let's find out. It's a good job we didn't, Hurst, because it's squirrels have tails.
Okay, great. So I get the final say this week.
You do. Sit down and relax while I talk to you about my number five pick. Now, my number five might actually surprise you, because you might have thought, ooh, squirrel's going to put this higher. Especially because I've got pictures of the main characters hanging in my living room. My number five is The Blues Brothers. It's a great film. It's a great film because the music is superb. But I have a list of classic films which I'm watching with my child because he won't have seen them growing up. So I'm making sure he gets educated in good older films. And The Blues Brothers is on there. And he's watching it and he's pissing himself. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how funny this film was. Because I kind of fall into the music. But then, yeah, it is really funny. And I like it a lot. And it's from the 80s. In fact, it is from 1980. There's now a debate about whether that's in the 80s or not, but it starts with an 8. All right. It's 2 hours, 13 minutes long, so a bit long for Hurst. It's directed by John Landis, who, of course, directed many, many other things, very famous, as you know. It stars Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. I'm not going to say much more about it, because I said quite a lot about it in the musical episode, but I am going to tell you the funniest line, according to Squirrel. I'm going to tell you this for each of my picks this week. The funniest line in The Blues Brothers is actually delivered by John Candy. And he says, hi, this is car 55. We're in a truck. So there you go. I like that line a lot. Number five, The Blues Brothers.
Fair play. I did know it was going to be in there. I wasn't sure where it would land on it because, frankly, we've been spoiled with our homework this week. And
so many good films. The fact that I had to boot some of them off my list has made me very sad, as this always does. Rankers, yeah. You don't know how hard it is to pick five when the category is so great. Like, it's such a difficult, cruel thing to put yourself through. But we do it, Hurst. We do it for the rankers.
We do it for the rankers.
Or at work, or in their car, or in bed.
So for me, at number five, I have Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure from 1989, starring Keanu Reeves, Alex Winter, George Carlin, length an hour and a half, which is absolutely spot on for a comedy.
Nailed on.
Yep. You don't need any more than that to make your good jokes, but certainly you don't want to be, for me, breaching the two-hour mark unless comedy is kind of a substring to something else. So if it's sci-fi that's quite funny, you can get away with it. I've tried to focus as much as I can on the pure comedies, but some bits scraped in. So, dude, this movie is excellent in every sense. A couple of time-traveling slackers stumble their way through history class with Socrates, Joan of Arc, Billy the Kid, Genghis Khan, Abe Lincoln, Sigmund Freud, Napoleon, and somehow it's cool. It shouldn't be, but it is. It sounds like a dumb stoner flick, but actually it's got surprisingly philosophical heart. And that does include, of course, some of the philosophies such as be excellent to each other. Party on, dudes. But that be excellent to each other is actually just fantastic philosophy and something you should go about life thinking. I've gone with my favourite quotes this week. I haven't gone for just the pure best line. Some of them, it was too difficult. Strange things are afoot at the Circle K. and then philosophize with him, Ted. It's like, all we are is dust in the wind, dude.
Dust, wind. Dude.
And then the line that made me laugh out loud was, dude, you killed Ted, you medieval dickweed. Quality insulting medieval dudes.
Yep.
Fantastic stuff. Love the film.
Yep.
Love the philosophy. And launched Keanu Reeves. I'm surprised Alex Winter didn't go on to do more stuff because he is fucking hilarious in that film.
He is, and he doesn't age either. No. He looked the same in Lost Boys. He looks the same in Bill and Ted. He looked the same in Bill and Ted 3, which came out, I don't know, 5-10 years ago now. So,
yeah.
No, an excellent choice. The most excellent choice, Hurst. I enjoy Bill and Ted a lot. Interesting thing that you said about trying to choose comedies. It's difficult to say that something isn't a comedy film. Like, Back to the Future has quite a lot of jokes in. Is it a comedy film? Not really, not for the purposes of my list, although an excellent film, of course.
Yeah, I had exactly the same thing. That's a sci-fi film that has some good jokes or got some comedy parts to it. I entirely agree. I had to work my way through the likes of that and Ghostbusters, a horror film that is kind of comedy-based but isn't really laugh-out-loud funny. It's just kind of funny. Yeah, it was a difficult week. It was, I suppose, like Big Man Action. You just kind of had a feeling as to whether something should be in the list or not.
Excellent clarification on Ghostbusters, Hurst. My number four is Ghostbusters.
Oh, dear.
I feel it led far enough into the comedy to be on my list. It certainly isn't something that I would describe as a pure horror film. But anyway, no. Ghostbusters, as you all know, came out in 1984, and it starred Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Early Hudson as the Ghostbusters, and Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis as Dana and Lewis. It was very funny and very good. The special effects were amazing for the time. It just seemed to land at the exact right time to become an absolute cult classic. And nearly everyone who's listening to this, in fact, no, I'm gonna put my neck on the line, Hurst. Everyone that's listening to this podcast right now has seen Ghostbusters. And everyone that's listening to this podcast that's seen Ghostbusters also enjoyed Ghostbusters. That is why it's on my list of top 80s comedies. My favorite line, of course, is, yes, it's true. This man has no dick. So there we are.
Yeah, it's
just it is a classic Murray delivery.
It's funny. And it's more, Ray Parker Jr., the Ghostbusters theme tune, just absolutely banging. And everyone knows still to this day, if someone says, well, who are you going to call? People know it's Ghostbusters. People know
who they're going to call. Yep.
No, it's a great choice. I don't object to it being in there at all. I used it as an example of a different genre that it could be considered in that. I mean, especially in the beginning with the lady in the library, that's pretty scary shit.
That is.
But after that, it takes a much funnier turn.
Yes,
there are some great lines in it. So fair play, mate. My number four, and as I say, I'm very confident this week.
Well, cross your fingers, Rankers.
The hurdle I normally seem to stumble up is The Princess Bride from 1987, starring Carrie Elwes, Robin Wright, Mandy Patinkin, and Andre the Giant. An hour and 38 minutes, so another right in the sweet spot. Now, this one is a bit of a genre crosser.
Yes.
And I had to think, this is the one that's least pure comedy of my list, because is it a comedy? Is it a swashbuckler? Is it fantasy? Is it romance? And the answer is, of course, yes. It's all of those, and it's perfect. Yes. Princess Bride is a miracle of tone and a masterclass of meta-satire. That's right, Rankers. I just used the expression meta-satire.
Ooh.
Rankle gave me that one. I said, thanks, Rankle. What is a meta-satire? Well, it's basically it's something that knows what it is. So it knows that it's a story and a fairy tale, and it kind of plays on that. It lovely skewers fairy tale tropes and delivers one of the most heartfelt adventures of the decade, and so many quotable lines. Pretty much every character could lead their own movie. And behind all the jokes, it's a moving tale of love and revenge and extra large rodents. Brilliant stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed watching that again. My top quotes from that included, of course, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Of course.
Which, of course, Puss in Boots, whilst not officially directly based on Antonio Banderas, there might have been some Inigo Montoya in there. And, of course, inconceivable. Yeah. Which was then followed, of course, by, you keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. And as you wish, as she pushes him down the hill and he's rolling down it going, as you wish. And then she just leaps down the hill. And it's a brilliant physical comedy as well as great delivery, great lines, just an excellently executed meta satire. Number four, Princess Bride. Tell me I'm wrong, Rankers. Come at me.
They might. Who knows? They might come at me as well for Ghostbusters. It might be both of us.
If they do, they are definitely not listening to this, right?
Well, they might also come at me for my number three, because I went back and I checked the original request, which was 80s comedies. Double checked it. I checked what we said last week. It's all good. Number three, Blackadder Goes Forth.
Okay.
All right. Not a movie. Like, I checked and checked and checked, and nowhere was the word movie used. So I'm like, all right, I'm having Blackadder, because I am. And I'm having all the Blackadders were in the 80s. Blackadder Goes Forth was in 89. And wow, I chose Blackadder Goes Forth because it's, frankly, the best one of the four. Come at me. Blackadder Goes Forth. Blackadder is a TV comedy show in the UK, and it should be known worldwide because it's one of the funniest goddamn things that has ever existed. It stars Rowan Atkinson as Blackadder, who plays various Blackadders throughout the ages. And this one's set in World War One, and he's joined by Tony Robinson, who is Baldric, who is his either his servant or his friend, depending on what series you're watching, and he's a proper idiot. And there's your premise for Blackadder Goes Forth. They're in the war, they don't want to be in the war, they manage to make it absolutely hilarious, apart from, as everybody knows, the final scene, which is just harrowing. So we won't talk about that. We're going to talk about the funny bits. Yeah, I love it. I love Blackadder. I love Stephen Fry playing that guy. Is he playing? Melchett. Does he play Darling?
So Melchett. Funny.
Who plays Darling? Darling's just funny as hell.
Oh, yeah, Captain Darling. I can't remember his name. Yes. Really funny.
Well, all that matters is that he's called Darling, and people will say things like, yes, Darling, and it's just so ridiculously honest and so
And the face he pulls every time Melchett calls him Darling, because he can't complain, he just twitches.
Yes, indeed. It's Tim McInerney plays Captain Darling. Evan Darling. It's just funny as hell. It's nonstop. They didn't do a single bad episode. There was only 6 episodes in each series because British, that's how we did things. And I love it. I love it to death. I watch it too much and it's great. Funniest line is actually a series of lines. It's a poem Baldric wrote about the war, and it goes like this. Hear the words I sing. War's a horrid thing, but still I sing, 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 ding-a-ling-a-ling. So there we are. Is just
I thought you were going to go with the boom, boom, boom.
There's so boom. Many.
That's another great
hour. The sound of the guns, right? Boom, yeah. Boom, 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 boom. Let me guess, Baldric. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, Blackadder is hilarious. Yeah, I'm surprised you went with the TV thing and the fact that you did precurse it and saying, I double checked, makes you feel like you maybe did a bad thing.
Well, let me know, Rankers. We'll find out next week, Kers.
Well, fear not, Rankers. I have stuck firmly into the movie genre, and I am ploughing into number 3 with the 1980 classic Airplane, starring Robert Hayes, Julie Haggerty, and Leslie Nielsen. Length 1 hour 28, another one right in the sweet spot.
Mm.
So, sorry, this is basically the comedy equivalent of a machine gun. It is one joke after another without any pause for breath. It defined the spoof genre for decades, and it turned deadpan delivery into an art form. The idea is that, you know, there's a bunch of people on a plane, including the star Stryker, who had PTSD from flying planes in Vietnam. All the people who had fish on the plane get sick, including all 3 pilots, and Stryker has to land it. That's the very loose coat hanger on which they hung the whole thing, and it is fucking hilarious. I remember it being funny, but as I watched back through it, even in the first hour, I must have laughed out loud 8 or 9 times. I think partially because I knew what was coming, partially because I'd forgotten bits, and partially just because the delivery is so damn funny. And although he's not the main character, Leslie Nielsen is clearly the MVP, delivering with his absurdity with absolute sincerity. Every scene's got a gag, every gag is a punchline, every punchline is a callback. It's so funny, and it's so short that if you haven't seen Airplane, you really ought to. So many quotes. Narrowing it down is really difficult. The Leslie Nielsen, the classic that people still use to this, like, surely you can't be serious. It's like, I am serious. And don't call me Shirley. You're needed in the cockpit. What is it? It's a small room at the front of the plane, but that's not important right now. And that whole part of comedy, that is spun out of Airplane, and it's still funny today.
We have to get this woman to a hospital. What is it? It's a big building with doctors and nurses, but that's not important right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's nonstop. Every little bit of it, even the small details, every scene has got something funny going on in it, whether it's right in your face or in the background. It's an assault on the funny bone, that film, and I highly recommend it. And my final quote is from the ridiculous character. It's like, the fog is getting thicker. And he just jumps in, grabs the guy's life handles, and goes, and Leon's getting larger. And then jumps out again. Completely absurd. Masses to love in that film. And I'm delighted that I got to go back through it. So, yay for ranking number 3, Airplane.
Yeah, it is a great film. I watched it for this. It's probably my number 7 because I did want to talk about it, but I thought, oh, Hurst will do it. It'll be fine. And there it is. Yeah, one thing I noticed, which I noticed with a lot of the 80s comedy films I watched in prep for this, just they will find an excuse to throw a naked woman on the screen.
Yes.
Like, yes, my list was nearly rather than funniest lines, is there boobs? Because so many of them just randomly throw boobs in.
Wouldn't even be, is there boobs? Is how many boobs?
Well, that's true. But there's only, well, two, I guess, four, I guess, in Airplane, right? Because it's got the bit with the people in the background who you can briefly see having sex. But yeah, at some point, everyone's panicking and just a pair of breasts. You can't see her face or anything else about this lady. Just kind of walks across in front of the camera. And yeah, a lot of that goes on in 80s comedy. They will find an excuse to shoehorn some nakedness in there. So fair enough. Where's my number two? Ah, yes. Who did you mention as being the standout star of Airplane there, Hurst?
Leslie Nielsen, of course.
Yes. Wouldn't it be great if he had his whole film to do that rather than just, you know, the second two-thirds of the film? Well, I've chosen The Naked Gun as my number two rankers. It's a lot like Airplane, but it's the police, and it's more Leslie Nielsen, and it's just fucking hilarious. I watched this one last night, actually, and it was, or maybe the night before, that's not important. It's just great. It's like Detective Frank Drebin is the worst police officer ever, and he kind of stumbles into all the answers to all the things. And it's brilliant. He gives it that same deadpan delivery that he did in Airplane. It's got an excellent star turn by Priscilla Presley, of all people, Elvis's wife, being the love interest. Some guy called O.J. Simpson turns up. And then we're moving on. Very funny. He has to solve a plot to kill the Queen of England. They mean Queen Elizabeth II, who is not, of course, the Queen of England. She's the Queen of Great Britain and the Commonwealth. But America, you know, they'll get there in the end. It's just great. It's brilliant. He umpires a baseball match. He dresses. It's just utterly absurd. All of it is absolutely absurd. None of it makes any sense. If you kind of walk into the middle of it, you'll think, what is this absolute trash? And then you'll watch it for 5 seconds and go, oh, no, wait, I get the joke now. We're off. And you will be just away with this film, which is one, well, as you know, one of my favorite comedies, because here it is at number two of all the ages, possibly the best decade for comedy. There you go.
Yeah, it is really funny. Anything Leslie Nielsen at that point was just gold, wasn't it?
It was.
That was a spin-off from the TV series, wasn't it? Police Squad. So it's Naked Gun, a police squad file.
They changed the names so they didn't confuse it with Police Academy, which was out and about at the same time. So that's why it wasn't called Police Squad. They also changed a couple of the actors, notably O.J. Simpson snuck in there. But yeah. Just a superb film and just quality funny over and over and over again. You will miss bits of the jokes because you're laughing too much and you'll have to go back and watch it. Funniest line, obviously, is an exchange between Drebin and Jade Spencer, the love interest. Nice beaver. Thanks. I just had it stuffed. And then she reaches down the ladder. She stood up and hands him a stuffed beaver. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Some double entendre slapstick excellence there. Yeah, it's very funny. Yep. Very funny. Good call.
All right.
My number two, it was always between one and two, and I chose it in the order I did just based on, I guess, how many times I've watched each. And it was a difficult one. So this, my number two could easily have been my number one, and I was delighted to get to watch it again this week. And it's still just as good as ever it was. And that is 1988's Coming to America, starring Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, James Earl Jones as the king. An hour and 57 minutes, so long for a comedy.
Ooh, yeah.
But it doesn't feel long. It's not just a comedy, it's a cultural event. So Eddie Murphy at the absolute peak of his powers, supported by pitch-perfect Arsenio Hall and an ensemble cast where almost every side character could probably carry their own spin-offs. There are so many great little bits to just fill it out. So the idea is that Eddie Murphy is the prince of Paul's one moment.
Zamunda.
So the premise is that Eddie Murphy is the prince of Zamunda, and he's due on his 21st birthday to be given a wife, and he doesn't want to be told who he has to marry. So he decides he's going to go to America to try and find a wife, and they end up in Queens in New York, which they use because it's Queens, but obviously it's a backstreet shithole. And it follows the story of him trying to pretend not to be rich so he could find someone who loves him for him, which sounds all right, but it's just the whole character actor. And him and Arsenio Hall play so many different characters, and you spot them on the way through. So they play the barber, the preacher, all sorts of others. And funnily enough, in the barbershop, I'd noticed this time, which I've never noticed before, the little kid in the barber's chair is Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, yes, the boy getting a haircut.
Yeah, the boy getting a haircut. I was like, oh, check that out. I was like, hang on a second. So, yeah, that's the idea. So the comedic timing is razor sharp. The facial expressions can carry a scene on their own, but the script is funny and the delivery is funny. The balance of innocence and sly mischief, which just makes his character Prince Akeem, like, absolutely lovable. And he's just like a cool character. Like, I was going to say, this is a bad analogy. Like in Mr. Deeds, like the character Adam Sandler plays is just a really likable character and he does everything right. Feels like in Coming to America, you just desperately want Akeem to succeed because he's so likable. There's no arrogance. And it's just the whole thing's just a quote goldmine. So I've chosen some of my favorites, which right. include, it's my 21st birthday. Do you think perhaps just once I might use the bathroom by myself? He says to his guy, he's like, most amusing, sire. Wipers? The royal penis is clean, your highness. This is all just in the part of his pampered life before he leaves.
And it's where they sneak the boobs in as well, isn't it?
Yes, they don't even sneak them in. And then when the king is talking to him about arranged marriages, he says, so you see, my son, there's a very fine line between love and nausea. And the look that she gives him, his wife, is absolutely deadly. When the arranged marriage turns up, the song that, what's his name? Afio Oha. Yeah, then Oha just breaks out this thing. She's your queen to be. He sings this whole really high-pitched song as she's coming in, which includes the word, free from infection, to be used at your discretion.
Charming.
It's so wrong, but so funny. And then there's Soul Glow. Oh, you have to watch it. It's so funny. They've actually done a sequel. I've only seen the one, which is also brilliant. They bring back all the characters, people who've not been in movies for decades, suddenly back to coming to America, using the word too. And there is, when he's walking along, he gives away a big wad of money that he's nicked off Arsenio Hall, his sidekick, who keeps on buying expensive things that are going to blow his cover. And he gives it to this tramp, and it's a little bonus Easter egg. So when he hands him the money, turns out it's Randolph and Mortimer Duke from Trading Places, which of course Eddie Murphy is in, which is a lovely little universe crossover where kindness meets karmic justice. So yeah, it's a hilarious film. I absolutely love it, and it can do no wrong. It's also one of the first ever fully black ensemble casts. Certainly in successful mainstream movies. And I only noticed that this time, which is how good it is. It doesn't feel like it's a forced DEI, like we should make sure we do a film with all black people. And it's like, it just was, because it made sense. And it was excellently cast, excellently written, acted, directed. The whole thing's banging. I'll shut up now.
Absolutely superb film. Yes, you've got a sneaky Samuel L. Jackson in there as well as Lee Robert. Yes, I think that might have been the first time he was in a film as well as Cuba Gooding Jr. So good job. Yeah, great film. Like, can't disagree with any of it. Love it. Brilliant. Yep, probably my number 8 on this list. That was certainly involved. All right. That is 5-2. But before we reveal our number 1's rankers, let's find out which comedy from the 80s is the worst. All right, Hurst.
Hit me.
So I refuse to watch this film again. I've seen it once. That was enough. Instead, I spent longer watching YouTube videos about why it's so bad than I would have spent watching the film. So go me. And also, I agree with everybody and all the bad things they said. Hurst, have you seen a movie called Soul Man?
No.
Good for you. Hurst, I'm just going to show you the trailer and I'm going to edit together your reactions for the rankers at home.
Oh, fucking hell. He didn't give up. He got down.
Just awful.
Jesus. How did that happen?
So the whole premise of the movie, for those of you that couldn't see that trailer, is that a guy got accepted into Harvard. Hooray. He couldn't afford to go. Sad. There was a scholarship position, but he couldn't take it because the scholarship position was for a black person and he wasn't a black person until he decided to just make himself one. Not by painting himself black, actually, Hurst. In the film, in universe anyway, he took an overdose of tanning pills, and that is what happened, apparently.
Oh, just so, so deeply offensive. I mean, I feel like I want to change my worst because I wasn't even aware of this. I mean, mine does have some of that in it, but
it's not a whole film of it.
It's not a whole film of it. It's...
Everyone in it is hatefully racist. Everyone, no matter what color the character is in the movie, they're all horribly racist. James Earl Jones is in it. Oh, no, what's he doing? Leslie Nielsen's in it. What's he doing, right? The incredibly attractive Ray Dawn Chong is the love interest. She's so gorgeous. If you've seen Commando, she's the lady from Commando. And she's like, don't date white guys. But it doesn't matter because he's pretending not to be one of those. So, you know, cons her into that. Oh, it's just awful. And at the end of the film, I shit you not, you thinking he kind of comes out as white. And then James Earl Jones says, maybe you've learned a little something about what it's like to be a black man. And honest to Christ, there's a line in the film, which is racism is terrible, especially when you're white.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. Like, okay, there's a tiny bit where you think they're redeeming themselves and then that happens and you're like, oh God, no, this is absolutely terrible.
I mean, it's shocking. I was entirely unaware this existed.
Remain that way.
I've never seen it, so it's hard to judge. And there were others that I hadn't seen when I looked up what's the worst. And I didn't watch them because there were too many good ones I needed to watch. So I just had to pick on what I'd seen and thought not the same depth and grossness of reason as that. There were two films I'd not seen. I had to pick one to watch. I thought I would try and squeeze this in. So it was between Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Trading Places.
Yes. You meant for the worst.
No, not for the worst, for the list. So I thought, well, I'll watch Trading Places. And it was awful.
Oh, God. Rankers. Former Q.
But you have to watch it again in the cold light of 2025. It's starring Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis, and it's nearly 2 hours long. So it's from 1983, and the premise is that these two uber-rich guys decide to fuck about with the lives of an annoying rich person and a black beggar by switching their places because they have absolute control over their lives, just for a bet of $1 to see if they would be able to cope in the other place. It's racist. It's misogynistic. I mean, they use the N-word several times quite flippantly. And outside of that, it's just not even funny. It's a horrible concept, and I felt it was horribly executed. Watching a man's wealth and status taken away, watching his mental decline, which just I didn't find funny. And it's a sour punchline. And then as they're getting their own back, you think, okay, well, at least there's some comeuppance there. Dan Aykroyd turns up wearing blackface and they're calling it edgy. That. To me, because I have no nostalgia for it, and I was seeing it as it was, to me, it's something that's just aged like milk in the sun. I found it cringy and difficult to watch. Like Eddie Murphy suddenly is super proper and knows how to do trading shares, which is like, okay, well, that's nonsense. But also, actually, Dan Aykroyd's performance of someone who's had their life taken apart at the whim of someone else, if you turn that into an actual, like, a thriller, that might work as a concept. But as a comedy, that's just not fucking funny, man. Hated it.
Wow.
But of course, now I've seen Soul Man's out there, so that's worse than Trading Places, and I haven't even seen it. And I know people are going to fill it with hate, but it doesn't matter because it doesn't count.
It's a fucking good job.
Yeah.
I really like Trading Places.
People will be sad, but anyone who hasn't seen it should watch it, and they'll probably go, yeah, that's bad.
Yes, there's some bits that you should probably take out of it. That is absolutely true. I think that's
also true. Yeah, and then it might be half an hour long, so it'll be all right.
A lot of the films have mentioned Airplane, for example. Horrifically homophobic.
Yeah, it's not in the same league of...
It's a different form of hatred. Goodness. Oh, imagine thinking it's not funny. I don't know. I can't go out. Fair enough.
I didn't get it.
But at the beginning where it's pretending to be a homeless... Oh, right, fine. What is it? Oh, right, no. My Harvard tie.
There are some funny lines, but the whole thing as a concept I find quite horrifying.
All right, well, there you are. So potentially some doesn't matter rankers, doesn't matter, don't vote based on the worst, do comment on it, rankers, but don't vote on it. Maybe I'm wrong, right? I don't know. I fully
expect to be wrong there, but I didn't put it in at number 4, so I'm all right.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Well, we've discussed the worst. Shall we find out which is the best?
Let's do it.
My number one, Hurst, has already been mentioned.
Ooh.
What do you think it might be?
Trading Places.
No, it's not Trading Places, no.
But it's not Bill and Ted.
Yes, Bill and Ted. There you go. Yeah. I was about to give you a clue of it being a most excellent film. Bill and Goddamn Ted. 1989, as Hurst said. An hour and 30 minutes bang on, as Hurst said. Directed by Stephen Herrick. He also directed Critters, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, and 101 Dalmatians for Disney. So there you are. I love Bill and Ted so hard. Most people that know me know this for a fact. I have many Bill and Ted related things around my house. I own many, many, many Bill and Ted related URLs for websites. Don't know why. I just do. Like, I love it. I think it's brilliant. It's one of my favorite things.
You have to say that it's a good job that Bogus Journey wasn't in the 80s.
Yes.
That made life a bit easier, didn't it?
It did, because Bogus Journey is also an excellent film. But Bill and Ted, I had it on video. Of course I did. I watched it over and over again, especially the bit where they are chasing the historical figures through the mall and trying to catch them. And Mozart is playing on Beethoven. Sorry, what am I on about? And Beethoven is playing on the keyboards in that shop. And, oh, he's just freaking brilliant. I love Bill and Ted. I love them as characters. I love their philosophy on life. Love that had George Carlin, RIP, of course, as Rufus. I love that there's a time anomaly because no one ever said his name was Rufus apart from Bill and Ted. Interesting. It's just great. Funniest line, in my opinion, every time I watch this scene, I will laugh. It's when Alex Winter Bill says, "Dude, you got to have a poker face like me." And then 2 seconds later, looks at his car and goes, "We're free aces." And it's just every fucking time I will laugh at that. That or Napoleon in the bowling hall.
But also the face he pulls after he tells him to have a poker face. He actually pulls a poker face and it's just fucking hilarious.
Just such a great film. I love it so much. And it is my number one. Comedy was probably always going to be my number one 80s comedy, even though I did give it some thought. Couldn't put Roger Rabbit on the list, Hurst. Couldn't put freaking... Oh, so many things I wanted on this list that I...
Roger Rabbit was a real pesky one for me. That was the first VHS I ever bought. Like back when you never bought VHSs, you only ever rented them. It's like, no, I need to own that film. I would have been young, but I needed it. But again, that's one I just deemed as like, it's a comedy, but it's like a kids' film slash comedy, like sci-fi slash comedy. And it's like, oh, it was a wrangle to try and get it in there. It would have certainly a worthy mention for me, so many others.
But would you like a fact? About Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Fact. The characters say dude 70 times and excellent 30 times throughout the film. Or, fact. Tom Cruise was originally going to play the role of Bill Preston, but he was busy filming Bill on the 4th of July.
I did hear he was going to, he was considered for both parts at the same time. They were going to flip the camera.
Like Eddie Murphy, the hairdresser as well.
To America, I think he was probably considered for Bill.
All right. Hurst, the fact is, characters say do 70 times and excellent 30 times. Tom Cruise
shit on it. Shit on it. A most excellent choice for number one, mate. My number one is from 1988. An hour and 50 minutes.
Ooh.
Quite long, but outstanding, starring Steve Martin, Michael Caine, and Glenn Headley. It is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Again.
The summary of it is two con men on the French Riviera, no morals. Steve Martin's chaos meets Michael Caine's cultured cruelty in a symphony of scams and one-upmanship and cork-popping twists. And it's not just funny, it's precision engineered comedy. The physical gags are flawless. The script just crackles with wit. And it's just a masterclass of character contrast and comedic escalation. So the two guys, basically, Michael Caine is on the French Riviera in Beaumont-sur-Mer. And I should probably look up their characters. I can't stop calling them Michael Caine and... Steve Martin plays Freddie Benson, who is an American brash short con guy who, even on the way in, is scamming a lady out of some lunch and somewhere to stay. Whereas Michael Caine as Lawrence Jameson ha- has this massive estate, Beaumont-sur-Mer, this posh French Riviera, and he's been working the long con for years and years, and they bump into each other, and Steve Martin's character is not welcome in Beaumont-sur-Mer, and because Lawrence Jameson has the police in his pocket, they tried to get rid of him, but then they can't, and he comes back, and then they say, well, we'll have to have a competition to see who gets to stay here, and they pick a mark, which is Janet Colgate, who is played by Glenn Headley. And she is, again, brilliant. She plays her part fantastically. And they have a bet who can get $50,000 out of her first. Whoever it is gets to stay. The other one has to leave. And the whole film follows that progress around as they both come up with ideas and then scupper each other. But prior to that, Michael Caine tries to teach Steve Martin. So Lawrence James tries to teach Freddie how to be sophisticated like him in order that he can go away and leave him alone. And he makes him play this character, Ruprecht, who's basically a, I suppose, of the time you'd say retarded, like, younger brother of Lawrence Jameson, who sits in his little cage with an eye patch and a fork with a cork on it, because he keeps on jabbing himself in the eye. And the whole thing with Ruprecht, the monkey boy, is so fucking funny. Like, Ruprecht sits at the table and goes, excuse me, may I go to the bathroom? And they say, yes, of course. And he sits there and pulls his face and just goes, thank you. And he's just this hilarious, like, he's so funny. Best quotes: Ruprecht, do you want the genital cuff? just absolutely stacked with them. It's a brilliant film. They did a reboot of it starring Anne Hathaway and I don't even care. And it wasn't like they took the idea. They took Beaumont-sur-Mer. The whole thing was just lifted and pasted as women instead. Bit of a Ghostbusters effort. I was like, oh man, why? Why not just come up with something new and good? It should not have been remade. It'd be like remaking Jaws. Yeah. Leave it alone, everyone. But yeah, for me, number one, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So, so funny. Would you like a fact and an estimated fact?
I would love a fact and an estimated fact.
Fact. The Ruprecht character Steve Martin plays was actually inspired by a real-life con man, Leon de Vries, a 19th-century Belgian scam artist who posed as a mentally impaired aristocrat to gain access to noble estates across Europe.
All right.
Fact. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was originally pitched for Mick Jagger and David Bowie. They were fresh off their Dancing in the Street collaboration and expressed an interest in doing a comedy together.
Weirdly, I haven't actually seen this film. Sorry, Hurst.
Oh, no, I'm delighted for you, mate. You get to watch it for the first time.
What if I watch it and think it's terrible like you did with Trading Places? Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not quite offensive as that, though.
I haven't seen this, but I'm almost positive that I know that the answer is it was originally for Mick Jagger and David Bowie. Now you'll tell me I'm wrong, but in my brain, that happened, right?
That is correct.
Yes.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was originally picked for Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
I win at fact versus estimated fact. Hello, Rankers. Squirrel here. Apologies, but somehow the software we use to record this stuff has lost the last 5 minutes of the recording. Yay. Everyone is very pleased. So, I'm afraid the shenanigans of a podcast, you haven't got us spinning the wheel, but it did pick the top 5 sitcom wives, which will be coming your way this time next week. As always, we're on YouTube, Facebook, Blue Sky, all that stuff. Top 5 Face Off. You can find us if you want to talk to us. Hello at top5faceoff.co.uk. If you want to vote, and I know you do, go to top5faceoff.co.uk. Thank you very much to our supporters club. That is Kovach and Davpaz. Sorry about the ridiculous end to this recording. Please rewind this podcast to the next person to come along, and we will see you next week with Sitcom Wives.
See you later then, Rankers. Love you.
Bye.
Top 5 Face Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Face Off.
Face Off. Top 5 Face Off. Top 5 Face Off.
May I go to the bathroom? I say, yes, of course. And he just sits there for a moment, pulls a face.
Did an ice cream van just arrive?
Yeah. Doing the Robin Hood theme tune. Feared by the bad, loved by the good. Oh, it gets stuck Robin in my head endlessly.
Who did you mention as being the standout star of Naked Gun there?
Leslie Nielsen, of course.
Who did you mention as being the... Fuck that up, didn't I? And this is Top 5 Face Off, the official world rankings of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Well, Squirrel, today we shall be ranking the top 5 80s movies with a comedy background.
No, we won't. 80s comedies, Hurst. What's the name of your number 5, that big sandwich?
The bread, the giant bread end, meaty, heaty, hyper shit. Hang on.
Yep. Hyper shit.
Hyper shit. Right, where is it?
At the end of the episode. Beep. Easy win here. Hurst List was as run of the... Fucking hell. Easy win here. Hurst List was as run of... Fuck, this is hard to say. Easy win here. Hurst's list was as run of the mill as Squirrel's vehicle list last week. Interestingly, the place where I work to smell this vile scent is in Train Sim World 5, part of a paid-for DLC. I don't think we've ever had to edit something out of a comment and move it to the outtakes because it's so boring, but we're about to. So there we are, Hurst. Thank you very much for everyone that ranked, and the official top 5 sandwiches. Official, officially, a faux-sure, a functional, a flavor.
Very good.
Thanks. Top 5 Face Off.